And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome to another Wine Chat with our friend Jack Farrell from Haskell's. Good morning, Jack.
Hiya, Denny. How are you today?
Well, I'm a lot of smiles because I'm looking at that forecast, and I totally believe by Monday we'll see some CCO lenders in shorts. I believe
it. I won't be surprised.
I think
I wouldn't. We're a hardy lot, believe me, when it comes to exercise and being out of doors.
It's so true. Well, what can we talk about today?
You know, today I thought I'd do an educational thing, and we'd talk about cork and a little bit about screw caps.
Right.
You know, cork is a very interesting product. It's a naturally renewable resource, and it comes from cork trees that are only grown primarily in Portugal, a few in Spain, and then several in North Africa. And there's a few plantings in Italy and France as well. But actually, the bulk of it, 65% of the corks that are used in wine come from Portugal. And the rest come from are lesser and come from Spain. And Portugal also produces the best cork that's available. You know, it's very interesting to see cork trees being harvested. They cut the bark off the tree. The tree has to be at least 20 to 25 years old before they can take the bark off. And that first bark has to be used for ingredients 20 to 25 years old before they can take the bark off. And that first bark has to be used for ingredients and composites and everything else because the first harvest isn't very good. Then they can take another harvest about 9 years later, and every 9 years, and the oak tree's life's there from 200 to 300 years, so that's a lot of harvest out of a tree, even though it's only every 9 years. And some trees are even more lengthy because it can take sometimes up to 13, 14 years for the cork to get to a thickness that's acceptable for whatever the product is. But it's a very interesting procedure. They're specialists that remove the cork. They're known as extractors. And they take an incision in the tree, and then they take kind of a giant crowbar and pry that cork off of the tree. And then they have to lay the tree or that bark to the side, and it stays out in the open for, sometimes as much as a year. And then they take the cork in and process it into all the different uses that cork is used for. And cork has, you know, a noble history. It's been used for thousands of years, primarily as a flotation device in the early on, because, you know, wine being sealed with cork is a relatively new thing. It only started in the early 1700s. Prior to that, all the wine was shipped in barrels. And this is surprising. While the barrels had cork stoppers in them, and they didn't get around, and that goes back to medieval times. Wine actually, in ancient Roman times, ancient Greece time, was stored in amphora, which are big clay pots, and they have a point on the bottom, and that's how they were shipped too, in this point, so they wouldn't juggle around. And they sealed the wine on top by putting a layer of olive oil on top of the wine. So the wine would be, believe it or not, that's amphora, which is the same thing as a sort of a clay flower pot. They're made on the same sort of material. A little air gets through there. So they had aged wine in ancient Rome and ancient Greece, etc., but because of the amphora breathe. But then come the Middle Ages and that disappeared, and all the wine had to be drunk the year it was made. Or, you know, the natural enemy of wine is light and air, and that's why wine's kind of kept in a cellar for the darkness. And air, one of the problems with air is even in a barrel, wine tends to evaporate, and you have to be constantly either topping up the barrel or doing something, or the wine will go bad. And, you know, bad wine is vinegar. In fact, vinegar, the word itself is from vin and agar, two Latin words, vin for wine, agar for sour. So vinegar is sour wine. And these amphora were a wonderful thing, but like I say, they were lost in the Middle Ages. They went to barrel. And then in about the mid-1700s, glass finally became inexpensive enough where very, very good wine would be shipped in bottles and corked. And it really was the Champagne area that pioneered that in the early 1700s. In fact, if you look at a Champagne cork, it's very interesting. The next time you pop a bottle of Champagne, take a look at the cork. You'll see it's three layers of cork, and they all go different ways. And that cork, when it went into the Champagne bottle, was a perfect cylinder. And when it pops out, it looks like a mushroom. And that's because the pressure of putting that in there and keeping it in there with the wire seal on the top has converted it into a mushroom shape from the cylinder that went in there. But it was one of the first uses of composite cork. In other words, the little bits and pieces of cork they made into composite and made these special cylinders for champagne. However, the corks we know that go into wine are a relatively new innovation. By new, I mean a couple hundred years old, where wines began to be shipped. They even used to ship the really good wines from Bordeaux. The major market was London, which was, you know, kind of the most sophisticated city in the world at that time. And they would send it in barrels, and they didn't start shipping in bottles until the 1900s, because they would let them bottle it. It was cheaper to ship the barrel to England and have them bottle it there. And then they discovered about bottle fraud. In other words, they were ordering one kind of wine, labeling it differently, and selling it. And the British wine merchants were pretty good at that. The French decided, well, we're going to brand our corks. So all the Bordeaux wines, if you look at them even today, you'll see the name of the property and the year on the cork. In fact, you see that today on all good wines. In fact, that's why we give a waiter, when you go into the restaurant, you may wonder, why does he give you the cork to smell? Actually, the wine would have to be pretty horrible for you to be able to detect how bad it is from smelling the cork. What you really are looking for when he hands you that cork is the authenticity of the wine. Is the wine on the cork, impressed on the cork, the name and the vintage, the same as you've gotten? And that's why they give you the cork. But it's kind of romantic, and people like it. And that's, therein comes the problem with screw caps. What guarantee do you have that that's authentic? Because it's a screw cap. But screw caps are Stelvin sealers, and Stelvin is like Kleenex. So when you talk about tissue, a lot of people use tissue or Kleenex. Doesn't make any difference. The same thing with screw cap or Stelvin stopper. Stelvin was the name of an inventor in France who invented that screw cap that kind of looks like it has a foil covering on it, but it unscrews off the top. And what really gave screw caps a big boost was a cork sickness that wine's got. In fact, every now and then you'll still get a wine that's corked, although they've solved that problem tremendously. But about 25, 30 years ago, I'm going to guess as much as 5 or 6% of the wine in the world was corked, and people would drink it without even knowing that. And they just think their taste was off for the day, or the wine just was their mood or something, and they'd drink the wine anyway. I mean, it really wasn't bad, but it has an unpleasant aroma. In fact, a corked aroma, the next time you are having a discussion on wine, smells a little bit like damp cardboard or a moldy basement. And when you get that smell in a wine, that wet cardboard smell, that wine is usually corked. Well, anyhow, corked wine became a huge, huge problem, and actually was solved in Australia. Even though Stelvin was French, an Australian winemaker in the early 80s went to France and saw this big company and asked Stelvin, who was the inventor, to create this cork, and he did. And it was for Australian wines. And, you know, Australian wines today, about 90% of them are Stelvin sealed. And, of course, the pioneer in that was New Zealand, where almost 100% of the wines in New Zealand are bottled today in screw caps. And in fact, I had a funny story once when I was in New Zealand once, and I was visiting Kim Crawford, and Kim is a man, incidentally. And we were sitting at his arbor at a table, having a wonderful conversation, tasting the current vintage. He opened a bottle of wine, and it was tinned. In other words, you could taste the metal. It smelled like a tin can, and that's because the little cork on top of the Stelvin sealer. On the inside, if you look on a screw cap, there's a kind of a cork mat that fits inside the top of that, and that's what holds the wine away from the metal in the screw cap. And it, somehow these wine got exposed to that, and it was tinned, and we all laughed about it because he had never tasted a tin wine, and neither had any of us. But it was very, very clearly a taste that you would get out if you, like, smelled an open tin can. But anyhow, I digress for a moment. We've had screw caps for a long time. Back in the 50s, they had big jug wines that had screw caps on them, etc. But Stelvin put this into an art, and they really designed this screw top just for wines. And it works very, very well. The only problem with it, and once when I had a winery in Italy, we decided to do an experiment with cork and sealing it, the wine another way. And we opened it 5 or 6 years later, I guess it was, and tasted the two wine. The wine that had a natural cork in it had aged a little bit and was maturing beautifully. The one that had the screw cap on it, or the Stelvin closing, actually tasted like the day it was bottled. It hadn't changed one bit. And that's fine when you're talking about lesser wines and wines that aren't outrageously expensive. When you talk about expensive wine, they want that little bit of aging in it. So, you know, cork is much more desirable. Plus, of course, it's romantic. You know, the sound of a cork popping is part of the joy of enjoying a glass of wine. So I think there's a great place for both. As I said, all the New Zealand wines today are Stelvin sealed, and about 90% of the ones from Australia are, and whether they're leading the world or what, I'm not sure, but that says a lot. I think that wines that are, say, $30 and under, screw cap is fine. When you get to more expensive wine, I think you want that age in it. If you're having an old Barolo or an old Bordeaux or a Burgundy that was 15 or years old or so, you really want that little bit of air that air seeps through the cork. Not very much. It's a little like the Romans with those amphora jars I mentioned earlier, where enough air goes through that clay in the amphora. Actually, believe it or not, a little air can get through that cork, and that helps the wine mature and develop, and you get all these wonderful nuances that come from a wine being sealed with a cork stopper. So while I think there's room for both of them, I think cork has learned to compete with Stelvin, and we aren't seeing as much corked wine in the world, and both of them have a definite place. And, you know, let's face it, it's pretty easy to open a Stelvin top as opposed to pulling a cork, especially some of the corks that are made of composite materials. They're made of, like, plastic material. Some of those artificial corks are damn near impossible to get out of a wine bottle. They're so in there so tight. So a real cork is the preferred sealant for wine, in my opinion. And a Stelvin topping, they have their place. I mean, if you're off on a picnic or something, at least you don't have the worry of opening the wine without a corkscrew when you have a screw cap wine. And I think the stigma is long since gone about screw cap wines. There was a stigma for many, many years. In fact, one of the first ones, this is a kind of an interesting story, the current governor of California was involved when he was in San Francisco in a winery called Plump Jack. And Plump Jack put the first $100 Cabernet in a screw cap. And, of course, it didn't sell. People weren't going to pay $100 for a top with a screw. I mean, they sold a little of it, but, you know, not enough. They had to go back and rebottle it all with corks in it, et cetera. In fact, when I was watching the news, I said to my wife, and this is maybe a year and a half ago, that governor looked so familiar. It took me about 2 weeks to put him and Plump Jack together, but he was one of the owners of Plump Jack, and they were real pioneers with expensive wines being sealed with a Stelvin topper. So there's space for both of them. So if nothing else today, you learned about cork coming from being peeled from oak trees, mainly in Portugal, and you learned that screw cap wines aren't really a demeaning thing. There's some bloody good wine in the world. Very good. In fact, some super wines that have Stelvin sealers or a screw cap. So I think there's a place for both. And the argument is simply, which do you prefer?
Yes, and there is a place to find any kind of wine you want to test, and I urge you to do so. Get to Haskell's.
Thank you, Denny. That's true. The folks at Haskell's are called the wine people, and there's a good reason for that. For 87 years, we have been supplying the Twin Cities with fine wines and spirits, and that's a long, long time. And over that time, we certainly have picked up a thing or two that sets us apart. And I urge you to stop in the Haskell's, tell them what you're preparing. They'll pick a wine that'll go perfectly with whatever you're doing. And you know what? They'll pick a wine that won't break the bank. There's a Haskell's near you where you can save on wine. Haskell's in Bloomington. There's a Haskell's in Excelsior. In Faribault, right off of 35, our Maple Grove Super Cellar is worth the trip up there. 22,000 square feet of fine wines. Our downtown Minneapolis store has free parking on Saturday and Sunday. Minnetonka at Ridgedale, there's a Haskell's in Plymouth.